It's Wednesday, July 29th, 2026. Improvements to the subway, affordable housing units coming to Queens, and a conversation with a Fordham University law professor on temporary protected status. That's What's What today. I'm your host, Sonia Wellawadagoda. Upgrades are coming to the subway. WFUV's Lainey Nguyen has more on the MTA's plan to address pain points for one of the city's most used transportation options.
The more than a century-old subway system is getting a tune-up, or an untangling, as some may say. In a new report, the MTA is addressing bottlenecks that cause delays for riders across the city. The plan includes swapping the 3 and 5 train tracks in Brooklyn to untwist the Nostrand Junction, and updating signals and switches on the B and D lines. Jamie Torres-Springer is the president of construction for the MTA. He says this report is the first of many.
This is really, in a way, the kickoff of that as we look ahead to our next 20-year needs assessment, which will look at the MTA system all the way out to 2050.
The MTA says the problem areas are a result of a system that was designed more than 100 years ago, when 3 different companies were in charge of the subway. But the changes aren't happening just yet. The planned projects could start in 2030 when the MTA's next 5-year capital plan goes into effect. I'm Lainey Nguyen, WFUV News.
A vacant lot is being turned into almost 1,000 new apartments in Queens, and 2/3 of the units will be affordable for extremely low to moderate income households. It's a part of Block by Block, Mayor Zoran Mamdani's housing plan for New York City. Jeff Ginsburg is the CEO of Volunteers for America, Greater New York, which is a part of the development team. He says this project will help address the city's housing crisis.
Public-private partnerships like this $700 million investment into Long Island City, are a crucial tool to increasing housing supply, which we know is one of several things that will help reduce poverty and make housing more affordable for all New Yorkers.
The mixed-use development will consist of 3 buildings, and it'll be called the Orion. Aside from affordable housing, it'll also include 149 apartments for formerly homeless individuals, and it'll include a childcare center and community spaces. A start and end date for the construction of the project has not yet been announced. In January, New York City passed a series of laws to protect delivery workers. Mayor Zoran Mamdani says those laws are working. WFUV's Olivia Regina has more on a new report about how pay for delivery workers has gone up.
Mayor Zoran Mamdani has a tip for Uber Eats and DoorDash. Don't take money from delivery workers in New York City. According to a new report from the Department of Consumer and Worker Protection, or DCWP, tips for delivery workers in New York City have almost doubled in the last 6 months. The increase follows a series of laws passed in January, aimed to strengthen the rights of delivery workers. That includes increasing pay transparency, expanding the minimum pay rate, improving access to bathrooms, and requiring a tipping option at checkout. It's that last law that Mamdani says is helping increase tips for delivery workers. He says Uber Eats and DoorDash purposefully hid tipping options on their apps.
They bet that they could take advantage of the delivery workers who traverse our city in sleet and snow, who bike in extreme heat and flooding in order to keep New Yorkers fed. My friends, they bet wrong.
In the 4 weeks following the new tipping law, average tips went from $1.18 to $2.29 per delivery. But according to the DCWP report, that's still lower than the average in November 2023, before delivery apps first redesigned to discourage tipping. DCWP says that's because the apps aren't required to revert to their original designs, and sometimes default to tipping options below 10%. Even so, the tipping protections are projected to increase delivery workers' total earnings by $184 million this year. I'm Livia Regina, WFUV News.
Storefront vacancies rose nearly 30% between 2020 and 2024 in New York City, yet rental prices mostly stayed the same. A new small business report suggests commercial landlords are intentionally leaving storefronts vacant so they can sell them instead of renting. WFUV's Xenia Gonickberg has more on how small business owners are responding.
La Cachette du Coin is a Haitian restaurant that sits on Rogers Avenue in Lefferts Gardens, just outside the Little Caribbean neighborhood in Brooklyn. It's been open since last December. But owner Eva Vollmer says, even though her restaurant has only been open for 7 months, she's already had problems with her landlord.
They called me even a month and a half ago, said in order for me to keep this space, I have to buy it for $2.5 million from them.
She says even though she signed a 10-year lease, her landlord is pushing her to buy the storefront instead of renting it. And she's one of many small business owners who are pushing for stronger protections from what they say are unfair treatment by their landlords.
Owning a small business is very hard. It's like nothing work on your favor. They're here to make you sell.
But not all landlords agree with this proposal. The small property owners of New York are pushing back. Board President Ann Korchak said in a statement that commercial rent control will harm both businesses and tenants. She thinks tax relief for property owners and renters is a better solution. You can learn more about the fight to pass the bill at smallbizunited.com. Zini Gonickberg, WFUV News.
Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, is a designation in the United States for members of a foreign country due to extreme conditions in that country. These conditions can include anything like armed conflict, civil war, environmental disasters, pandemics, and epidemics. Once a country is designated for TPS, the U.S. government then grants temporary protected status to eligible nationals from those countries who are already in the United States, most likely with other pending legal applications. On June 25, 2026, the U.S. Supreme Court voted in a 6-3 ruling to end TPS for over 6,000 Syrians and more than 300,000 Haitians. Final protections expired on Monday, July 27, 2026. I spoke with Fordham University law professor Gemma Soleimane, who specializes in immigration, about the revocation of TPS for Haitians and Syrians in the U.S. as a part of Fordham Conversations, our series that spotlights voices from Fordham University and the work of students, professional staff, and alumni.
Hi, Sonia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Why has temporary protected status been revoked from Syria and Haiti?
Well, Syria and Haiti are not the only two, but the Syrian and Haitian cases made it all the way to the Supreme Court. So clearly they are the ones that are now sort of more in the news and getting a lot of media attention for them. But remember that TPS is a country designation that is done by the United States, right? So the executive branch does have the power under the law to essentially revoke TPS, right? To terminate the TPS designation for the countries that they have designated to need TPS. Or whose nationals need temporary protected status. And so the, you know, that answer to that question, I imagine, would be answered differently, by many different people, depending on the way you're looking at things. But a decision was made, right, by our current government, by the current administration, that conditions were such that individuals, nationals from those countries could safely return. Now, you know, I think that even reasonable people could see that that is not as a blanket a rule and a statement that, you know, could hold water if one were to actually look at those things. But essentially, they were terminated. TPS was terminated because the government decided that the TPS designation was no longer needed.
For Syrian and Haitian communities in New York City, whatever statistic of that, whatever percentage is under TPS, how do you think that will affect those communities?
Well, I think there's, I think it's fair to say that there really is no question that there will have a dire effect on the community. You know, folks have been in the United States, either with or without TPS, but certainly those with TPS have made a life here, right? Especially with the country designations that have spanned sometimes decades, and Haiti is one of those places. Right, individuals are members of communities, right? They live and work in the community and provide support to their own community members. They've been working. I mean, you have TPS holders working in hospitals, working in, in home care, daycare, like assistants, home attendants. You have individuals who are nannies, who do cleaning, who are working in stores, right? Those individuals, once they are forced to have to leave, are certainly going, those industries, right, and those places of work, places of worship, right, those are all going to be affected by the loss of these community members. You have individuals who are parents, right, whose kids are in school, it's just like, and now what, what to do with the children, right, if parents have to leave. So it's really going to be a big upheaval, I imagine, no matter how you look at it, right? Families with mixed legal statuses, right? So you might have individuals who are United States citizens, children who are United States citizens, other family members who might have green cards and are permanent residents and can live and work here permanently, losing a family member who might be the sole breadwinner, or if the lease is in their name, right, now what happens to the apartment? I mean, those are just small quick examples that come off the top of my head, but I think there are some real life consequences. I mean, you think about any community losing, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of individuals in one fell sweep, that could, really be an issue.
Thank you so much for explaining that topic to me and explaining to our listeners.
Thank you so much, Sonia.
That was Fordham Law Professor Gemma Soleimane on temporary protected status for WFUV's Fordham Conversations. And that's our show for today. You can find more stories online at wfuvnews.org and on Instagram and TikTok at wfuvnews. Please follow and rate us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. If you have a tip or a question for us, send us a DM or email at newsroom@wfuv.org. I'm your host and producer, Sonia Wellow-Dagoda. Our reporters today are Lainey Nguyen, Sienna Reinders, Olivia Regina, Xenia Gonickberg, and myself. Nathan Ray and Tess Novotny are our editors.